Hi there, I am Ivy Lassiter, and I am happy to welcome you to the Four Parents Podcast. Pop in your earbuds and multitask while we talk about parenting things, lessons learned, funny stories, and practical wisdom from normal people who have been there. Okay, y'all are in for a real treat on this one. I am talking with Miles and Allie Melbert, parents of four kids. Their oldest, Marley, is a student at Baylor. Their next, Mace, is at the Air Force Academy, and their next, Sawyer and Beckham, are in high school. The Melberts were one of the first families I remember meeting when I started my new job. And last summer, I spent some time with Marley as she worked as a resident at our church. And from that experience, I knew this was a couple I wanted to learn from. So I am giddy for you to hear this because it is packed full of practical and inspiring wisdom. Here we go. You have four kids, which to some people might feel like a lot. I don't know. You know, did you, it's a few. Did you always want four, or was that like, how did you know, like, okay, four is where we stop, or, you know,
you got this.
Yeah. I think so growing up, we each have one older sister.
Okay.
Right. So two mm-hmm. families of four, you know, two siblings. And when we met and started, you know, got to the point where we're getting engaged and getting married, we're like, okay, start talking about this. And
yeah,
it's like, no, we both want bigger families.
Uh-huh.
So that was cool. And
yeah.
So we got into it and, you know, sure enough, we had Marley first and then Mace and then Sawyer came along. And then after Sawyer came along, we're like, we always knew we wanted at least three.
Uh-huh.
That was the number. We wanted at least three.
Yeah.
Sawyer came along and I kind of looked at Allie and was like, all right, are we done? And she's like, I don't think we're done.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay. And then the fourth one came along and you know, I had struggles because each pregnancy was progressively more difficult physically on Allie.
Really?
And yeah.
Like you were sick and stuff? Older.
But yeah.
But
Beckham was like, you carried Beckham between your knees.
And, oh, gosh.
And I mean, and it was like, and I would see this physical, you know, toll it was taking on her.
Yeah.
Anyway, but when we had Beckham, she's like, okay, I think we're done. And then we're like, okay, she's like, will you go to the doctor?
And then we were done.
I remember it a little differently.
Oh, okay. Usually that's how it is. Yeah.
I remember through the pregnancy with me being in pain, he was like, okay, after this, we're done. No, we're done.
Yeah.
No more. And I was like, okay. You know, I totally get that. Yeah, I'm with you. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to go do the SNP as soon as I can. You
yes.
know, give me, you tell me what, yeah, a year after the, like, when is the baby? A year or 6 months or when do we go do that?
So yeah.
I do remember I did not ask him to go do that.
It was more like when you watched her in pregnancy, it was like, we're done.
It was time.
Yeah.
And plus we were nearing 40 at that point. So
yeah.
it was
about, I was 35 whenever I had
that's nearing
him.
40.
He rounds up a lot.
35.
Right.
Yes.
That's nearing 40. Anyway.
Yeah. So y'all kinda always from the beginning, you're like, we want a bigger family.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Do y'all and now
don't regret it.
Yeah.
No way.
Were there moments where you're like, this is a lot of children?
No.
No.
No. There, no.
Some of my fondest memories are like even before Beckham was born. I have a Jeep, had a Jeep, still have it. Now my kids drive it, but
yeah.
It's like that Jeep I'll never sell.
Right.
And we would be driving to church on a spring day, had the top off, doors off the Jeep, three child seats across the back. And the looks that we would get
driving,
and she's pregnant in the front. And the looks
like,
that we would get,
need a different car.
Yeah, driving
yeah,
to church.
That is hilarious.
And we would just laugh, and you know, and yeah, is logistically is it kind of a thing? Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. But you know, Allie'd load them all up and go to Target.
You made it work
every time,
and loved it.
It was for us. It was just something that we really, really wanted.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And so once we had it, we loved every minute of it.
That is a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
You remember, this is what I prayed for.
I know.
And you remember back whenever, you know, we couldn't get pregnant for a year and a half or so.
Yeah.
And
And this is an answer to prayer.
Yeah.
So no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
we loved it.
That's good.
The chaos was awesome.
Yeah.
Somebody once told me nobody ever looks back on their life when they're 80 and wishes they had fewer kids.
Yeah. Right. I know.
And, you know, all the sacrifice and all the work and everything that goes into it then. But then, gosh, and we're starting to reap the benefits of that now because they're older.
Mm-hmm.
And just hanging out with them is so fun.
Yes.
And they, mm-hmm. and they enjoy each other's company. And they're, you know, two of them are adults now.
Right.
And the other two are nearing that. And it's just really, really awesome.
Yeah. That's good. It's a good perspective for people who have, like, multiple little kids when it's like, it's, you know. It's,
more people to care for us when we can't care for ourselves, right?
That's why the 80-year-olds are happy. They're I got a whole crew of people. Okay, so girl is oldest. Marley's your oldest. Three boys. And this is kind of a hard question because I just think birth order also plays a difference. But how was raising a girl different than raising boys?
Right.
Yeah, you take this one.
Well, and I think you definitely hit the nail on the head whenever you said birth order has a lot to do with it. I was thinking about this, okay, how do we raise her differently just because she's a firstborn daughter?
Right.
Or is it because she was a daughter?
Right.
There were some things that were different. Like, for instance, Miles does a fantastic job, always has, about having the boys get our Marley in my door.
Uh-huh.
Whether it's in the car or the, you know, store or home, whenever he was driving and I'm in the passenger seat, if one of the boys is with us and he's like, you got mom's door. So, and it's always been that way. So even whenever it's just Beckham and I, even when he was little, as soon as he could open the door, the car door, right? He was opening my door for me.
Oh.
So last night, whenever, you know, I took Beckham to his basketball game and Miles and Sawyer met us there, but walking out to the car at the house, Beckham runs out before me and gets the door. And you know, I love that because it's also teaching them, not that I need boys to get my door. I don't need that. But it's setting the standard of automatically letting that be a habit whenever they're in public and you're putting someone else before you.
Yeah.
It's that mindset.
Uh-huh.
And so that is one of the biggest things that I think, because they do that everywhere, whether it, you know, Walmart or home,
right,
church, wherever.
That's good.
I like to think we've parented the kids the same.
Mm-hmm.
But fact of the matter is that as we, and we probably started off that way,
mm-hmm.
but the deeper we got into it, for us, it was just, I mean, wouldn't you say, like, it was just necessary to parent them differently because they are each very different kids.
True. Yes.
Right. And now the standards we would hold for them are the same, like still very high and things like that. But once we started understanding their personalities more and their gifts and their bents and things like that, we had to adjust.
Right.
And because some of the, like things that Mace would respond well to, Sawyer would not.
Right.
Or, you know, and I couldn't parent Marley as my only daughter, right, the same way I would parent a son.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you just,
right,
you can't do that. And so everything from the way I would discipline them or we would discipline them to the behaviors that we would try and reinforce and things like that. So I don't know. What would you say?
No, when you were talking about the behaviors, one of the things that I do remember, you know, I had this, my firstborn being a daughter who was very careful and very analytical of everything. And then I had these boys, and I only had a sister. I did not have brothers.
Right.
So then I have this child that climbs everything, jumps off of everything.
Yes.
And
I'll never forget the first thing she says when Mace is born. She's like, "What do I do with a boy?"
I know. Yeah.
Yes. He would grunt eating his food. Mm-hmm. He just, you know, just had different sounds, different personality.
Yes.
And I knew that I did not want to hinder that fearlessness.
Yeah.
I wanted him to be a protector. I wanted him to be courageous.
Right.
I wanted him to not fear.
Yeah.
But as a mom, I could have easily, you know, been that helicopter mom or and suppressed some of that. So that was something that I had to be very intentional with, you know, holding my breath and letting him do maybe
be more of a risk taker.
Take more.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that was, that happened a lot.
Right.
He fell a lot.
Right.
But, you know, his personality was different, that he did get back up and didn't turn to look at me as mom, okay? You know?
Right.
He kept on going.
Right.
He still does.
So what is it? So you've got four very unique individuals with unique strengths and weaknesses and skill sets and things that they're going to push and things that are going to be, you know, what does it look like for y'all in parenting to navigate? Like, we want to be fair. We want our kid, you know, but obviously each individual needs
different,
you know, like they need a different discipline strategy.
Sure.
They need a different, they need space to think, or they need, do you know, like, what does that look like for y'all to get on the same page about that, to discern, to know what each kid needs?
Oh, man.
It's a lot of talking about it and saying, you know, I've heard the phrase, you know, you got to be a student of your child. Mm-hmm. So study them and know what works. And that is definitely something when we did, we said pop, what if you want to spank or whatever, you know?
Right.
We,
oh, yeah.
And for Mace, it just didn't bother him. He's like, he'll look you right in the eye and like, okay, go ahead. Uh-huh. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, bring it.
Right. And we were, I guess, probably Sawyer Beckham. It was traumatic, right? It definitely was different with them. So I think it's just communicating and telling and studying them.
Uh-huh.
And even talking to them about, okay, while we're doing this and we didn't do this with the other one, explaining like, well, we want it to work. We want it to register with you.
Yes.
We also messed up a lot. And so, well, I'll say I did. I won't speak for Allie, but one of the things that that I've always tried to do is like, if I said something to the kids or did something, you know, from a discipline standpoint or whatever, and most of the time it was the spirit through Allie helping me see like, hey, maybe
you were a little harsh there.
I was a little harsh. You shouldn't have done that or whatever. Or I was convicted myself, like whatever. You know, just going as soon as I could to them and saying, hey, look, I'm sorry. I was a bad daddy.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, daddies make mistakes and that kind of a thing. And what I would find is in doing that, it would just endear them to me even more.
For sure.
You know, because it was almost like then they would, I can distinctly remember every time I've done that.
Mm.
Their first reaction was to just latch onto me and hug me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and almost like consoling me, like, no, it's okay that you're a bad dad. You know, hey, you're really not a bad dad. But it was cute, but it also kind of reaffirmed and I've heard them make mention of it in the past, right? Like, hey, that kind of stood out to us.
Mm-hmm.
Like when, you know, when you would do that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it just kind of helped to see that, you're dad, but you also make mistakes and you're okay. It's okay to acknowledge that. And you're, you know, I'm hopefully not so prideful that I can't apologize to my children.
You've shown them what it looks like to be humble, be teachable, acknowledge your mistakes, which is so necessary as to have a relationship with God. We also have to see that about ourselves, and you showed that.
Which ultimately is what we're trying to model.
Right.
But.
Yeah. Which, so that's something that anyone that knows y'all, like, and your children have said this too, by the way, that it has been obvious that you guys have Jesus is the priority. Jesus is the priority.
Sure.
And so I want you to talk practically about what it looked like for you guys for Jesus to be the priority in your home.
Mm-hmm.
What did that look like?
Oh, goodness. For me, I will be honest, when they were young, it was scary because I still felt like a new believer and I was still learning how to follow Jesus myself. And to lead them was intimidating. Even though I was pursuing God, mm-hmm. but I had all the equipment, but there was always a voice saying, oh, you're not doing it right, or that's not gonna, and I did have to battle that.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think I would do it right. We didn't have that example.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it looked like to speak into my speak to have devotionals with them. Mm-hmm. Or actually, I think the right verbiage would I didn't think it sounded right coming out of my mouth. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I just didn't.
It wasn't what, did you experience, you didn't experience that growing up. So it felt like this, you were wearing new clothes or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And it felt like awkward that. Wearing, you know, yeah.
And no one was there to say, yes, that's right. Right?
Yeah.
And then am I going to say something wrong to them? Mm-hmm. But I remember early on, and I've talked with Miles about this, that me praying, and I used to pray, God, would you have Miles do this devotional with me? Would you have Miles pray, you know, make sure he leads us in prayer every night? God, would you have Miles? And God.
And I failed. I failed miserably.
No. That's not what that is about, baby.
That's just you, a little you, self-deprecating.
You got humor. Me. Uh-huh. I mean, I had been depending on you so much and too much. Mm-hmm. And God spoke clearly to me, like, Allie, you come to me. You don't need to come to me through Miles.
Yeah.
You come to me and learn. And I was, oh, I can do this. You know, I can learn by myself to you. And so that once I knew that I could do that and I took courage to do that on my own and I owned it, my faith just skyrocketed. And then I had all these things I wanted to tell my kids. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would talk about at morning devotional. Then it was every morning, we're going to talk about Jesus.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell y'all the things he's teaching me. I'm going to tell y'all whatever it is. And at the time, whenever I had four little ones, Instagram wasn't a thing. I had read some books and I knew what I wanted to do. And so I was just doing it, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And running with it. And so now there's all these different ideas to do at breakfast and throughout the day. And whether it's, you know, even now this morning, I'm like getting breakfast ready going, oh, I have not thought about what I'm going to share at breakfast. And God brought to mind, well, what did I show you last night?
Yes.
You know? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's great.
Yes.
Or sometimes there's these little video clips on Instagram that I save them to my sermon or my devotional folder. And then I can just put that up and show them that and that they respond well to that. Or, you know, there's 31 days and maybe it's Proverbs. And I'm like, oh, today's the 17th. We're going to read Proverbs 17. Or maybe there's a verse that God puts on my heart. And like, we're all going to memorize this verse. And so we talk about that verse at breakfast. But there's just a plethora of different things now that it's just come so much more naturally.
Right. We've got a lot of resources today that you didn't have, you know, 15 years ago. Right. But
I will say that she, you know, again, blocking and tackling, right? Like that we are kind of, Allie was very intentional about, you know, she's mentioning these breakfast things, but there's not a school day that I remember that hasn't started off with a devotional ever since the kids were in school. Mm-hmm. And so first thing is wake up. Kitchen table, mm-hmm. right? Before you get ready, before you brush your teeth, before mm-hmm. you are even fully awake, mm-hmm. right? The kids are at the table and Allie is sharing with them something. Just a few minutes, right?
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not anything that's going
right.
to, you know, take, like lose their interests or anything like
right.
that. I distinctly remember, especially when they were young, every week, Allie would print out a Bible verse you know, and tape it to the chair at the end of the table,
uh-huh.
the empty chair, right?
Yes.
And it's just like, okay, this week, that's the one we're learning, right? And they would be looking at it. And so like that, and I can't tell you, I think more than anything, I think that has had the single greatest impact on their spiritual formation more than anything else.
Yeah.
Right. Is just the daily habit of starting their day like that. When whenever they come out, you know, usually Allie and I are sitting there in our den, you know, and that's our quiet time. Mm-hmm. Period. So they see that.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's very important for them to see us spending time in the Word,
right?
Modeling and
and all of our Bibles are on the coffee table in the den, and so even the kids.
Yeah.
We. I mean, Marley is mature enough, and she does like to go back to her room and have her quiet time, right? Which, and we know that she's doing that.
Yes.
But. Yeah. Sometimes our boys need a little reminder. So whenever they see us, you know, they reach over, grab their Bible, and then they start reading. And
yeah, even, I mean, they don't want to every day, right?
No means automatic.
No.
Right.
It's like, well, have you read this morning yet? Yeah. Do you remember where you're reading this?
Where
morning?
Are you? What do you think?
And
There's that. I think the other things is just, you know, and I should know this, where this passage is, but I think it's Deuteronomy, but you know, like as you go along the road, as you everything you do, like, you know, we pray in the car, we talk about things as we're driving along, as whatever we're doing, right? Trying to infuse, I don't want to say a gospel conversation necessarily, but just like God, our focus in every conversation that we have. And because then we get used to looking through our lives with that lens. And
On that note, Moz did something that I love, and I've got so many people have sent me pictures of it, but we've had two boys play football. Uh-huh. And before every game, whether out of town or at home, Miles would go down the sidelines, and coaches knew that he was grabbing his boy and praying over him. And so
just
the
your
two of them.
Son?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And, I love that.
And you want to tell her what you pray mostly?
Yeah. Well, mostly I would, you know, you pray that, that they would, glorify God in everything they do on the field.
Right.
Right. That they would not get injured. Mm-hmm. Obviously that. And that all their actions and the words that they say and the things that they do on the field or on the court or whatever it is, would glorify Him. But, you know, Allie and I don't make big kids, right?
Uh-huh.
And so but they are fierce.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, what I would always pray over Mace and Beckham as well, who plays football, was that God would grant them the heart of a lion and the strength of 10 men.
Oh, and, I love that.
And that's become kind of a recurring kind of theme. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That even occurs today. Mm-hmm. You know, last night we were talking to Mace, and he's at the Air Force Academy now.
Right.
And it's first year, he's a freshman, he's getting dogged, like it's hard.
Yes.
And, you know, just made reference. I said, man, when you called, I was just praying for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, what were you praying? And I was like, heart of a lion, strength, you know, and he's just.
And so, he knows it.
He knows.
Yeah.
He knows what
that
I mean.
Phrase.
Yeah, oh yeah. Anyway, it's just one of those things. The coaches knew kind of. You know, game didn't start, or if you see this dad walking down to the field, you know, the sideline, it's cool.
But, yes.
You know,
I think it's, you know, like you'll probably talk about in a minute, but it's all those moments in between Sunday and Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. It's letting them see us. They're watching, and they're going to repeat what you do. And one of the things that I do, and I loved taking the kids with me to the grocery store, because we would pray before we got out.
Mm-hmm.
We would pray in the car, and there's always someone that we always recognized at the store that worked there, and we would pray for that person. And, you know, Lord, would you give us an encounter with them? Would you give us an opportunity to speak to them?
Grocery stores are Allie's mission field.
Yeah. They are.
I'm not kidding.
They are. I do not do mobile pickup. I love talking, and
Allie would go to the store, and it's like, okay, see you in 3 hours.
Oh,
right?
It's not that bad.
Well, I brought three people to Jesus at that. No.
And she knows, she knows like the snack delivery guy on a first name basis.
Oh, well, yeah.
I did, but he doesn't come to this one anymore. Yeah. Anyway, so they've gotten to see
that Jesus is not a Sunday morning thing.
It's not
it's
a
an
Sunday
every
morning.
Part of your
yeah,
life.
We're going to be praying over people at the store. We're going to be talking about Jesus.
Yes.
To whoever we can.
Mm-hmm.
But we, being a Sunday morning thing was important too.
Right.
And if there were ever any conflicts that arose from sports or activities or anything like that, it was sorry. If we're at home on Sunday, we're in church.
In town.
Right.
In town. Right. Yeah. And if we're in town. And you know, for us, that was very important to model that, to prioritize, biblical gathering with other like-minded believers and worshiping God on Sunday mornings. And for us, that it was important for us to prioritize that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was there any conflict with that, with you and your kid? Like, it was a thing?
They didn't have a choice.
It was always a conversation. I mean, it kind of, you start talking about it early on and it. Mm-hmm.
They understood why.
Yeah. Right.
And why it was important to us. And because God is not just a Sunday morning thing for us, they got it.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Don't you? I mean.
I do.
I don't ever remember them saying, gosh, I really want to go to baseball tournament on Sunday morning.
Right. It feels to me like your children all get along.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not like a fly on your wall or anything like that, but it feels to me like they have good camaraderie connection with one another.
100%.
Yeah. Maybe not 100% of the time, but a decent amount of time. Like, is that y'all's assessment of it? Would you?
Yes. Yes. For the most part. I mean, there's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you looking like that?
No.
I'm like,
no,
what do you have in mind?
I think there's one of the things we wanted to do was really, because neither Allie nor I are close, particularly close with our siblings.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah.
And have like this super tight, nuclear family, like
for sure.
We talk to each other all the time and
right,
all that stuff.
Right.
We love our sisters and all that, but,
right.
Very much, but, growing up, we weren't particularly close, and that was something that we wanted to be very intentional about with these guys. And just the way that manifested itself was like all of our boys, all their lives, have shared a room.
Mm-hmm.
All three of
right?
them.
So that there's something to be said about forced proximity.
Right. Wait, they all three shared a room together?
Yes.
Yeah. And even whenever our 19-year-old comes home, he still
sleeps in the room,
yeah.
Right?
Great.
Marley had her own room for obvious reasons.
Obviously,
right?
Yeah.
But all four share a bathroom.
All right, four share the same bathroom, things like that.
Now, Marley will come up and use ours because
she's
sharing
like,
it with three more.
She's like, dude.
Fair. We get it, Marley. We don't need to explain that. But yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That started to change. But
I will be honest. I'm a homebody just naturally. Mm-hmm. And I think that I kind of did not plan a whole lot for going places and getting the kids in different things. And so they were at home making plays by themselves and playing together a whole lot.
Right.
And I think that made a big difference.
Yeah.
Marley was in charge.
Yeah.
She was the ringleader for
plays.
And, you know, puppet shows and whatever else they would do, playing around. If it was movie night, she's like organizing everything. I mean,
she was babysitting.
If you know Marley, that's her, and she loves doing that. Mm-hmm. And the boys just ate that up, and they just adore her. Mm-hmm. I mean, they treat her like
we co-parent with her.
That's right. That's
right. Right. She's another like parent to them in some ways. Yeah.
You're not kidding. She started babysitting at a very early age
for us at 10. By the time she was 10,
she'd watch over her little brothers.
Right, yeah.
She did.
And she's responsible.
And she was great.
Cool. Yeah.
Plus, we saved a whole lot of money on
that. Tons of money.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
But she would, and she loved being the only girl in a family full of boys.
Mm-hmm.
And because she didn't have to share the spotlight with any other girl, right?
Right.
And I don't mean that to sound like, you know, Marley's an attention hog.
She's not at all.
She's super introverted and all that and just a doll. But she loved just having brothers.
Right.
And the boys, you know, they there's like this succession of, or this hierarchy, right, of, you know, of beatdowns a little bit, right? Uh-huh. And just maybe aggressive behavior.
Right. Because so, you got three boys.
Mace would always exert his dominance over Sawyer, but leave Beckham alone because Beckham was a little bitty, right?
Right.
And then Sawyer would then carry that forward, like, oh, you know,
right,
I can do this to my little brother, uh-huh, and that kind of thing. Beckham, being very much like Marley, thinks he's the boss of everyone.
Oh my gosh! Right?
And so, or thought he was. He doesn't, you know, when he was little, and it just created a interesting and fun dynamic. But
right,
I think one of the things to not to end that so abruptly, but one of the things that has helped is they did all go to a school that was K through 12. And so by the time Marley was 16, she was driving all of them to school, and they would see each other throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we loved that. Yeah. We did that intentionally so we could spend more time, because they do homeschool on Tuesday, Thursday.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so that also, because whenever I did drive them, we would pray on the way to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was passed on to Marley.
Uh-huh.
And Marley would pray on the way to school. Then that was passed on to Mace.
Oh.
And Mace would, once Marley graduated, then Mace would, and now that's passed on to Sawyer / Beckham. I'm not real clear.
Who's taking the lead on that?
Who's taking the lead on that? But yes, they do pray.
Cool.
They still pray in the car on the way to school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that riding together and having all that time together in the car has also brought them closer together. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you think?
Oh, totally. Totally.
Do y'all, I'm asking this because your kids mentioned something about it, that like there's like a you feel there's some things about being a Melbert. It's like these are family.
Melberts don't do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like it's a we're together on this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Was that intentional? Is that
for sure?
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And what's the philosophy, like, to expand on that so that
we
something
to
I get a plot.
If so-and-so's family doesn't do that, that's okay. Their family doesn't do that. Our family does do this. Or, you know, if their family does that, our family doesn't do that. I mean, they would look for certain reasons why, well, so-and-so's doing this, so-and-so's doing this.
Right.
Well, okay. You know, our family does not do that.
This is an intentional choice we've made, and together we're going to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
We set a family verse early on, Ephesians 4:1, right, which is, we urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received, right? So we've received this calling. And so with that calling comes, you know, like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Right. And so,
well, the next part is be completely humble and gentle, be patient.
Bearing with one another in love.
And we reminded the kids of that this morning, like bearing with one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, this is what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
And if your behavior doesn't jive with what we're about as a family, and, you know, it's everything from, it's not just spiritual stuff. It's also like integrity. Like, I tell my kids all the time, like, integrity takes a lifetime to gain and a moment to lose.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
That's good.
And
yeah.
So if you know, it's like and I'm not raising you to be this, right? Mm-hmm. Or I'm not raising you to act this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so Melberts don't do that, right? This is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And just reinforcing that. And so when you're reinforcing that collectively as a group, as a family, right? And like, okay, we're a team here.
Yes.
Right? And this is how we play.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that they kind of knew that if they stepped out of bounds, right, that they're going to hear about it.
Right.
Right. And potentially get punished for it or whatever it was. And, and so, 100% intentional.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I like about that is when it's a we, it's a Melberts don't. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm putting something on you that I myself am not going
to,
you know, like we encourage one another. I will encourage you and I'm expecting you to encourage, you know, it's those kinds of things.
Sure. Yeah,
like,
that's good.
rather than we are the parents exerting our
right.
Do as I say, not
yeah. as I do. We all are doing this. And if you see me not doing that, then that's a problem too.
That totally.
You know?
No, yeah.
Which then good. Full circle back to you apologizing.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so sorry. I did not do that.
Been there. Like yeah.
That. How have you made your home a place where your kids want to be?
Well, I feel like this is would be my answer for everything. Mm-hmm.
Scented candles.
I can do that.
We have a large scented candle budget.
He's not wrong.
You He's need not. It.
Allie knows
you
when all the all the house. Sales on the scented candles.
I
what know. Kind of candle? Anyway, sorry.
What's your favorite candle? Do you have a favorite?
There's one for every season that I
I love it.
There's one for every day of the week.
Yeah. No, not. I put like right now. I love the Bath and Body Works winter.
Uh-huh.
And okay. then yeah. in the summer, I like Cactus Blossom. In the fall, I like Leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So there's and then. So there's always, there are, I do burn a candle and I want it to be like whenever Marley and Mace come home and I'm burning Cactus Blossom, I want them to walk in, oh, it smells like home.
I know.
You know, I want that memory
yeah.
because there's such a,
there's an emotion. Sensory. There's strategic, strategic timing of cookie baking.
Uh-huh.
Right? So when they walk in the door, there's hot cookies, stuff like that. Not every day. I mean,
but
this is like,
right. we have fun Friday
This is usually like it's on Fridays
fun
or something.
Friday treats. I love this.
So whenever they get home on Friday, and it hasn't been as much since they've been in high school, but every now and then. It's still there. When they were yeah. little, they were always excited about what the Fun Friday treat was. So
I love that.
But okay.
Anyway, so yeah, that's not
it's not the candles. It's not the smell. But what I was going to say is what I would go back to, we have prayed in that house
mm-hmm.
so much as a family together, a prayer walk, those halls, one hall. I go in their bedrooms when they go to school and on my knees praying.
Yes.
I'm in the kitchen, usually available. If they walk in, they have my attention.
Right.
It's not a huge home
mm-hmm.
and we don't encourage. Someone told me one time before I had teenagers, they were giving me some advice, which I did not take, and I'm glad I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, all teenagers need a place to go and be alone.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my goodness, how am I going to do that? And it worried me that I was going to one day have four teenagers, and how am I going to do that? But our kids love to be out in the common area.
Right.
And to be around. And I love to see their face. And whenever they come out, I'm there. And,
right.
And we don't do a lot of yelling. I think that's another good thing. But it's a place of, they have my attention. Right. I am available and I'm going to be asking questions more than I am going to be instructing, I think.
Right.
And that's the season where we are right now.
With teenagers.
With teenagers, mm-hmm. right.
Because do their friends come over?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Decent amount?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so.
And do you do the same with their friends? Ask them, questions, yes. be available, listen, all of that
yes.
stuff.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They came over Wednesday
Yeah, their
night.
Friends are probably a little too comfortable.
Uh-oh.
No.
Yeah, what have you created? How did that happen?
Ivy, like, that's another whole story. I was not always good at this. I was scared. And because I grew up loving Martha Stewart and watching her all the time
yes.
and thinking my home had to be like that.
Right.
And that was something that God brought me through because when Marley was in seventh, I did not host Chi Alpha because we used to do them homes.
Right.
And I had to really pray through that. And then they asked me and I did it. And I had 11 girls in one bathroom in my house and it was amazing. And then the next year they asked if they had some Chinese boys coming to town to, they were going to put them in Christian homes. And
yes.
they asked if we would host a couple of Chinese boys. And I had to pray about it, and I said yes, and we did it, and we loved it. Then we had, you know, five kids in the house.
I was traveling, and yes. she was like, hey, we're going to be keeping a couple of Chinese boys for 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, cool.
I'm going to be gone.
I'm going to be traveling. I'm gone.
And you know,
she's like, cool. But
I did it. And
they were sweet boys.
They yeah. were sweet. We still communicate with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And were you a little worried at first, like only one bathroom,
mm-hmm.
like feeling yes. insecure
oh,
about that?
For sure. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Well, we,
but God, God showed me, he was like, there have been bigger families to make it in smaller homes.
Yes.
Than yours, Allie. You can do that. I've got this. And you're, and I read this book, Rosaria Butterfield, the Gospel Comes with a House Key.
Oh,
it's about hosting.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Hospitality, I should say. And that I had to get over the hump of what does my house look like? How big is my house? What, you know, we have very little parking because where we live on a one lane, like you have to pull over for someone to come down the street.
Single lane road. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you can't park on the street.
Yes.
I had to get over all of that and let God do his thing.
Mm-hmm. And, I love that.
And just trust that that he, whenever we found this house, we gave it to the Lord immediately.
Right.
And prayer walked every yard of it in the backyard and the front yard. And like, Lord, show us what you want to do with this.
Right.
This is, you brought it to us and it is yours. We will use it for your glory. And
right.
So that meant opening up my home. And
right.
We did always want it to be a place to where people would, where our kids' friends would feel comfortable.
Yes.
And then, you know, we work in students. And then they've asked us, I don't know how many years now, we've hosted poolside at our home.
Right.
And there will be over 100 kids, you know, in the backyard.
Or the Alpha Club at Plano East. Like, we don't have any kids that go to Plano East.
Uh-huh. Why do you want us to use it?
The students are like, it's the best. Oh, but your house is just, there's a feeling about it, right? And so they're like, we just love coming over to your house, Miss Allie and Mr. Miles, can we just please, you know, host our club at your house?
And we've given it to the Lord. Like, how do we say like,
right?
Oh, sure.
Course. Yes.
Right? You're going to be talking about Jesus to other kids in our house? Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, we can't say no to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you would say it's like a big reason for that is how much you've prayed over and in that house.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. During COVID, we you know, there wasn't church that we could come to, right? So we were at home, and we had that. I guess that was whenever we've also had a summer intern live with us for 2 summers, which awesome, love him. And so he was at home with us. Even we had him join us, but we would pick. I picked 6 rooms in our house. And the 6 of us, you know, our family members, would go to a different room and we would pray for 2 minutes. And then, you know, it's a smaller home. So I set the timer on my phone and it would boing and we would all go to the next house. The next room, sorry.
Yeah.
And then pray in that room for 2 minutes and then just move out throughout the house. And so we're praying over, you know, the den, the kitchen, the master bedroom, each of the kids' rooms, and the guest room. And it just, like, I told them, we talked about whenever you think about what you do in this room, you know, whether you're playing video games or entertaining or with friends, and
right.
pray over that, pray right. over the conversations. And so even my kids have gotten to experience praying in each room. And I think, I know that that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, we just because of the relationship that we tried to foster with each of our kids, I think maybe as a culmination of all the things that we've talked about already on this podcast, like all that is fed into why the kids like to be home.
Yeah.
You know, it's because of what it represents. It's this place is like foundational to who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not like the brick and mortar, it's like, home, the place, you know, and so when they come back, they're reminded of who they are.
Mm.
I like to think that,
yeah,
you know, but it's funny, man. They love to be at home,
and they're
cool with it. Mm-hmm. We love it. Oh my gosh,
yeah, I love that. Okay, when you think back, you've talked a bit about this, but things that you stressed about early on. I mean, I think the house is such a that resonates so much with me. But what things did you stress about early on that you can look back now and be like, oh my, it was fine, it was all good.
Oh goodness, yes. Okay, so Marley was practically mute in public until she was second grade.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She would speak to anyone. Uh-huh. And I would say, Marley, we're going to come here. I want you to say hi. And then I want you to say thank you. Because I knew that's what, and we would go and we would see the person that I wanted to say that to. It wouldn't happen. We would leave. And I was like, Marley, I told you to. And she said, I did. And I was like, no, you did not. And I think in her mind, she really thought she did. But she was very quiet. And I was very worried that she's not going to be able to communicate.
Right.
Right. She's not going to make any friends, which is another thing. She would be on the playground and play by herself for, first few years of school. She would not make friends. Those were my worries about Marley.
For sure.
But now I can say that you've spoken to her.
Yeah.
You've seen her.
She has said hi and bye to me before.
Yeah.
And other things.
It's come a long way.
The Lord hears prayers. Yeah. And another thing is, and Marley said, and I don't remember saying this, but I was talking to her about it the other day, but she said, I called it childhood Tourette's, that all four of our kids had this little habit of some kind that they did that I was worried. I was failing them because I didn't take them to a counselor or something to deal with this habit.
Kids have tics, like not little like habits. The little bugs, but just habits that they would just, like, or is that just us?
Kid,
I don't know.
No. They like weird, like.
Yes.
Little
habits they have to do in order to.
Right. Yeah. Like a weird noise or a facial expression. Yes. And you're like, what was that?
Yeah.
Is that going to stay forever?
Right.
Yeah.
One of our kids would have, It just every few seconds.
Wait, what?
And then
you're like, do you realize you're doing this?
Yeah. And we're
they did.
Yeah. Dude, stop. And then, Marley had several, it seems. She would go through several, right? Whether it was like eye rolls, not like rolling your eyes like, oh my gosh, but just like this.
You would be talking to her.
Like, and she'd like make her eyes real wide and kind of roll her eyes around. And you're like, why are you doing that? Yeah. Or
her socks.
Or a blinking thing.
A blinking thing. But her socks had to be lined up. We would put shoes and socks on so many different times because the little line on the socks was not lined up right. And we would almost be late going somewhere because the something under
she
clothing.
She couldn't move. Yeah. She would twirl. Like she'd be walking and then like do a little twirl.
From the table to the sink. She would have to
you're like,
do a twirl.
Why are you doing that? And then Beckham's our favorite. Like Beckham had this little thing where he'd be like, he'd have to go, he'd throw his hands up above his head and be like, woo.
No, woohoo.
Yeah. And so.
Just random.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. Yeah. And so he'd be out there and then he'd sort of woo. And you look at him, you're like, what are you woohooing about? Like, I don't know what's going on. Woo.
So by the fourth, were y'all like, it's fine. It'll pass. Or it always was like,
is wrong with us?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yes, in a way we would think, okay, well, we know it passes. We know that it, but in another way, we're like, can you hurry up and just stop?
Yeah, can you get through the next one?
That is a great example.
It's just and so you worry about stuff like that and you're like, all right, and just. Whatever.
Yeah. The older three are fine.
Yeah.
Right. It'll work itself out.
Yeah. Hopefully. And then, just worried about like, what are they going to, I guess, what are they going to just, you always worry about your kids' futures.
Right.
You always worry about their salvation, for Christian parents, right? And it's like, okay, a lot of times I think we can be overbearing. I know early on we were like, this is what we believe, okay. And, kind of like get on board and we could, but we never put the kids in a position because we realize that we want their faith to be their own, not ours.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sure. Right. We don't want them to have an inherited faith because that's not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We want them to experience God and come to Christ in God's timing when he's going to, turn their heart. And so, but by the same token, we have a responsibility to train them up in the way they should go.
Yeah.
So in doing that, we're trying to do our part. And then, just different timing. Mm-hmm. You know, Marley, like Mace was like five. Dude, got this. I'm in. Uh-huh. Boom. Uh-huh. And we're like, you're five.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even know where the bathroom is.
Right.
You
right.
know, or how to use it. Right. And,
yes.
and so, but he was, you know, he was in early on and he's still all in. Right. Which is awesome. Sawyer was, it was what, 15? Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, and they're all at different levels of spiritual maturity.
Right.
And things like that, which is okay. And we're, you know, it's something that we were really worried about. And the hard part with that one, more than like, okay, what are you guys going to do when you grow up? Mm-hmm. Right. Or, oh my gosh, you're never going to be able to hold a job or mm-hmm. holy cow, are you going to, you know, whatever, like, what are you going to do? The hardest part with the salvation one, right, is just, because that is so important.
Yeah.
There is nothing more important
right.
for Christian parents. And you're like, okay, God, like the ultimate display of faith is totally handing that over to God and
yes.
saying,
yes.
oh my gosh, God, please, like, it's not happening. Like, when are you going to do this, Lord, please? And being able to sit back and just, you know, listen to him and say, look, I love your kid more than you do. Yeah. Right. Just, you know, and that's still, I don't know, gosh, I still don't know if that's a guarantee that would ever happen for someone's kid. Mm-hmm. Right. But man, mm-hmm. Fortunately for us, all of our kids have turned to Jesus and we're very grateful for that.
Right.
And but anyway, so that one's a hard one,
yeah.
right? To totally tell yes. someone, oh, don't worry about it, man. It'll just happen when it happens.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yes.
What if it happens after I'm dead?
Well, I know.
Right. Or what if it happened? What if it doesn't happen when they're under the household? Because then once they leave, then you see all the stats and you see all the stuff and you're like, oh my gosh, they're going to have to hit rock bottom before Jesus, mm-hmm. you know, pulls them out. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that's what he wants, but you just, that one for me, was a hard one.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And just, it's both of the learning to like surrender it and give it to God and also ask him, help me to know if I'm doing anything that's hindering this myself. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes.
Cause I think it's very easy to like, I've messed this up. I've, you know, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. but it's you kind of need to both things. Mm-hmm. Give it all to God in that.
There is, but we have seen evidence of God's faithfulness in that, mm-hmm. and that, you know, and you know, we're blown away from that perspective, and super grateful that our kids love the Lord and but you know, so I think there's, you know, all we've tried to do is be obedient,
right,
do what God tells us to do in the best way that we can and know how, and then hopefully you know, or I shouldn't say hopefully, just trust him that will work itself out.
Right If you could go back to your new parent selves, what advice would you give?
Mm-hmm. You want to go first?
You go, baby.
Okay. Well, I think I would tell myself, don't, like, the desire for your kids to be good kids, the desire for your kids to do well in school, desire for your kids to be successful, all those are good,
mm-hmm.
but they're secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was talking about earlier, just draw close to the Lord and let all those other things come under the blanket of showing them who God is and letting them have an encounter with his love and actually knowing they're loved.
Yes.
And then the other things happen and you can still provide, like you were saying, you're doing other things, but having the main focus, God,
right?
Their whole purpose is to glorify God, mm-hmm. right? And to one day, however they can do it at however age they are, right?
Right.
But to share their faith and to talk about him and to make him a normal conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of, because there were so many things, you know, that my mind could not settle and
right.
thought about so many different things. But whenever I could just come to the point
yes.
of what my job is.
Yes.
And to point them to Christ.
Yes.
Then because they're not all going to be successful in my, you know, to what I think I want them to be, right?
Right.
And who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and they're not all going to make straight A's. That's not what's going to be important.
That's what I was like, the hardest, you know, well, I'll say one of I'll lead in with one of the most misquoted verses in the Bible, right? Philippians 4:13.
Uh-huh.
I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, mm-hmm. right? What Paul's really saying there is that God can give me strength to be content, because he's like, I've had plenty and I've been in want, right?
Yeah.
And all of this. And so to be content with your children, when you're, and I didn't talk to you about this, but I was thinking about this after.
No, I was thinking this
after
sounds
looking
good.
At the question was just like, you know, it, like you can't help but compare your kid to other kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like they're out there and you're like, holy cow, little Jimmy is doing long division. He's three.
Yeah.
And,
right.
Or,
yes.
You know, he's like 8 years old. He can dunk a basketball mm-hmm. or whatever. And you get into this comparison of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
You get, oh, well, so-and-so does this with their kids. I don't know, whatever. And you get into this comparison of kids and their abilities, is their intellect or their development or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, even from the very beginning, it's like, whose kid was the first one to roll over?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh my gosh, like,
I know.
What
yeah.
are we
yes.
doing?
Yeah.
And it's easy to get wrapped up in that. And so for like, if I was to go back to me and say, look, like, you know, remember what I said, like I being what, you know, God, remember
right.
what I've said in scripture
right.
about, you know, being content and I, you know, these are children, not, you know, not, they all develop differently and they all have different gifts and talents. They're all incredibly unique. I've made them fearfully and wonderfully. Awesome. Like, stop comparing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rejoice in who they are. Try and be obedient in the way I've told you how to raise them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's all going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, I would go back and tell myself that.
That's good, baby.
That's
hey,
really
thanks.
Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's good. What do you love about being a parent? What's the, let's say, best? Well, I said best thing. I feel like that's a little mm-hmm. bit hard. You can do top three.
Mm.
You know, I had to pray about this one
mm-hmm.
because there is so much.
Uh-huh.
I've always wanted to be a mom
mm-hmm.
and I love everything about it, absolutely everything about it. And so even just this morning, oh, I may get emotional, prayer walking and talking to God and just wondering, God, what would you say is the best thing about being a father to me? Or to us.
Yeah.
And it was so clear. He was like, loving you. And I think about that with my kids. And I enjoy loving them, mm. whether they succeed or not.
Mm-hmm.
I love whenever they say mama, dada, mm-hmm. right? And you love them.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they're hurt and they come to you for help and you hold them and you love them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, for me, that it's so widespread, but you get to, all of that is encompassed
yeah.
under just getting to love
yeah.
them.
Mm. Try to top that, Miles. We might want to end there. I don't know.
It's getting a little dusty in here.
We're all crying.
Getting a little dusty, I would say. When I married Allie, I was like, this is the best. Like, you have this maximum capacity for love. And then you don't even think you could love anybody anymore. Mm-hmm, yeah. And then you have a child.
Yeah.
And you realize that and then another child, and it's not like, okay, I only have a set amount of love that I can give. Right. It's just, no, yeah. God continues to expand your heart, your capacity mm-hmm, to love. Mm-hmm. And it's, they're just so, you know, they're so much more fun. I was talking to a young dad who's getting ready to have his second, you know, this morning. And I was asking him, we were having coffee, and I was asking him, I was like, so like, what are you most excited about and what are you most anxious about?
Yeah.
Like this second little guy coming.
Yeah.
You know, and he was going through some things and talking about this and as he was talking and we were talking about that and you know, I was just sitting there going, man, you know, it's so excited for him about what he was about to experience and have another child and, you know, grow his family and just all the good things that happen. And it's so, we did talk about how is it hard work? 100%. Right. Does it take more intentionality than anything else you've ever done in your life? 100%.
Yes.
Are what's fun about being a parent of toddlers different than what's fun about being a parent of teenagers versus young adults? 100%.
Yeah.
Right. And it just, like now they're a lot more fun to hang out with now than they were when they were toddlers.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause they're adult. You know, it's like us hanging out. Yeah. It's fun. With them, it's work. I had to make sure they weren't hitting their head on the table, table corner.
Yes.
Just stay alive. Let's make it to the next day and victory. All right.
Yeah.
Allie and I would high five at the end of every night. And we're like, okay, another day.
Yeah.
And, you know, and on you go, but for different reasons, and it just gets sweeter and sweeter, I think, as time goes on, at least what I enjoy about being their dad. There's also nothing more gratifying, I think, or fun, I would say, than watching your kids excel at something they're passionate about.
Yeah.
Love doing that. So when we'd see Marley on stage, you know, in a theater production, you know, or Mace out on the field or whatever, right? You know, Sawyer behind the drums and, you know, Beckham doing just about everything. He's kind of like the golden child. And so, like, you can...
He'll appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. It's super fun to watch them do things they love and do it really with excellence.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun. That's good. You know, and so if your kids are able to find something like that, then awesome. Mm-hmm. Right. They may not find that particular thing until later or whatever, but it's really cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's hard to whittle this down to just one takeaway, but the thing that hit me while I was recording and again when I was re-listening was this. Allie said she was waiting on Miles to lead in a certain way. And ultimately what God did was call her to step up to the plate. It reminds me of the story when Jesus feeds 5,000 people. And the disciples were waiting on and even straight up asked Jesus to send the crowd away because they are hungry. But Jesus had a different plan. His response was, no, you give them something to eat. You do it. Sometimes Jesus' solutions are different than what we think they should be. And I wonder if God is ever intentionally not acting because he's compelling you to be the one to take action. And here's the cool thing. What happens when we get to be a part of the action? It's transformative for us. I mean, it changes us. It gives meaning and purpose to our lives. We get this firsthand, real-life look at the miracles of Jesus. We get to see the action happen. And I see that in the disciples' experience with feeding the 5,000. And I got this glimpse of that in Allie's life and hearing about their story. She wasn't simply a spectator, but she got to jump in on the action and come alongside Miles and was a part of pointing her kids towards Jesus. What a gift. What a gift, and it's possible for you. It's possible for you.
In the next episode, you're going to get to hear about their parenting from their college-age kids. Like, we get to hear it from that perspective. And let me tell you, it's so inspiring. I loved it. I can't wait for you to hear it. It'll be out in a couple weeks. Thank you for listening today. It really is a privilege to share these stories with you. It's so life-giving to me, and I hope you are enjoying them. I will talk to you guys next time.